It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with two audio adaptations of frightening fiction about detrimental dialogue and wicked warnings. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Alyssa Williford and Quincy Lee are voice talents Olivia Steele, Jonathan West, Eric Peabody, and Nick Goroff. Now, get your ticket ready. Take your seat in our Theater of the Minds. And brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by Alyssa Williford and performed by Jonathan West and Olivia Steele. This short story, in the form of a dialogue over walkie-talkie, explores the experiences of two building inspectors as they investigate an underground parking garage in suburban Osaka, Japan. Now, without further ado, I present to you the code and the key.
Steve, come in. Do you read me? Over.
Loud and clear. Over.
The audio from these things might be loud, but it sure isn't clear. Also, do we really have to say over? It's just the two of us in the channel.
Where's your sense of whimsicality, Joanna? Over.
Gosh, I guess I forgot to bring it today. For some reason, you telling me that we'd be coming to an abandoned parking garage gave me the impression that this wouldn't be much fun.
You can have fun anywhere if you really want to. Maybe those huge rats we saw by your position would want to play Twister or something. Over.
Enough with the jokes. This place is creepy, Steve. All I have against the dark is this flashlight, and its beam barely even reaches across this level. And that dripping, do you hear that down where you are?
It'd have to be pretty loud drip for me to hear it through a whole level's worth of concrete, Joanna. Over.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it could echo down from the ramp or something. But the thing is, Steve, I can't see any water. This place looks like it's dry as a bone. Where's it coming from?
And that's why we're here, eh? Mysteries like that pay our salaries. Just think of the millions of yen a leak like that might cost to fix if it's left untreated. Over.
Speak in dollars, would you? I've never been here before, and this currency looks like Monopoly money. Why are all the numbers so big?
Pay? That means we're getting paid a big number. Over.
Not in real money, though. Just in yens or whatever. By the time we cash our checks for all this, it'll probably be just enough for a burger at McD's. And you know, I thought Japan was supposed to be cool, but once you get over the shock of seeing all the loop-the-loop, whirly-whirl writing, this part of it mostly just feels like any old chain store-infested suburb.
That's Osaka for you. It's a post-war metropolis. Just like L.A. Over.
Well, I don't like L.A. either. And if this city is all so new, how come they've forgotten what's down in this parking garage? I'm used to checking out century-old warehouses, but this place was only built in the 80s.
You saw how many times it's changed owners. Maybe somebody made illegal alterations down here. I mean, that's what inspection consulting is all about. Getting to the bottom of these weird properties. All right, I'm going to start heading down further. This level looks more or less like the one you're on, minus the boarded up exit ramp. Over.
Okay, I'm taking notes on the survey record. What made you want to expand the business over here, if we're basically doing the same stuff as back in New York?
These special cases exist all over the world. Buildings whose owners don't know what'll be required to get them whipped into shape, but who don't want to pay for a whole renovation without checking it out first. And when I met Taro at that party, I decided it was a sign from the gods. Japan is just the beginning. Over.
Ambitious, aren't you? And conducting this inspection yourself is also a pretty unique move.
That's how you succeed, right? Taking big risk. I want to install confidence in Matsuda. I think they're leery as it is about hiring foreigners to do this kind of thing. Plus, it only makes sense. I've spent months going over the Osaka Municipal Code with Taro. Once some other people from the company get brushed up too, I won't have to fly over here very often. Say, how's your Japanese? Over.
Terrible. But I've learned to recognize the characters for extreme danger, and I'm pretty sure that's what the sign on the way in said.
Yeah, good grief. Where's your international spirit? Tell you what, after this, we'll go visit Osaka Castle on the company time. My treat. Over.
Isn't admission like $4 a person? Quite a treat. How are things looking where you are now?
Don't look a gift horse in the mouth, Joanna. Okay, I'm calling this level P3. According to the certificate of occupancy, it was just supposed to be another parking level. Over.
You're saying that like there's something unusual there.
Nah, it's just more parking stalls. One thing, though, the concrete pillars have a different layout than the level above. Why that is only God knows, but it's a clear code violation. My engineering knowledge might be rusty, but it looks to me like they're really overstressed. Over.
That's interesting. Jeez, it's actually pretty cold in here.
Right? Outside, it's like the devil's armpit. I don't know I could get that humid. I grew up in D.C., but I am freezing right now. I thought I was going to want an iced coffee after this, but now I'm thinking I'll need a hot one. The vending machine outside was selling both. Over.
This country is crazy.
The word you're looking for is innovative, my friend. I'm heading down the ramp to P4 now. Over.
Are the stairwells blocked down there too?
The ones on P2 and P3 were jammed up in the same way as on your level. Just a mass of concrete and twisted steel spilling out the door. Clear issue. Nothing short of a backhoe could get through it. I'm going to examine this level and I'll tell you in a second. Over.
Well, that's bizarre. Normally, wouldn't there be a violation issued for that kind of thing? I mean, it's a fire hazard, right? In case somebody needs to evacuate?
Yeah, it would be. In any case, you can't have structurally unstable debris just sitting in a place of public assembly, but... Okay. This is weird. Over.
What?
I've gotten over to the stairwell access door on this level. It's pristine. Looks completely intact, like I should be able to pull it open and head into the stairwell. But when I turn the handle, it refuses to move. It's an ordinary code-compliant brushed steel door handle, but it might as well be cast from cement. Over.
Okay, I'm noting that down. That's strange. Maybe it's stuck or something? How about the pillars?
Well... Yeah, but if it were stuck, I could at least move it a little, you know? This, it's like the whole door assembly has been somehow fused together, but there's no visible damage to any of it. Yeah, it beats me. Anyway, yeah, the pillars looks like the same configuration as on P3. Over.
Another clear violation. Steve, how deep does this place go again? I want to finish this up sooner rather than later.
I'm with you on that, believe me. You don't even have to be down here. It's damn cold. I think when I first mentioned the temperature, it might have been, I don't know, 60 degrees, but now it's probably not even 50. I wish I brought a jacket. Over.
I told you to. It's already 7:30 and the sun is going down soon.
This is way beyond the normal drop at night. Maybe it's just because I'm getting pretty far underground. Hey, actually, I've got a thermometer here. I'll give you the readings for each floor. Okay, 4 is 8.9. Over.
These crazy metric units. I'm taking that down.
To answer your question about the depth, the official C of O says there are 8 levels. So, we're already more than halfway done. Over.
Great job with that math.
Thanks. Cooper Union should never have rejected me. Okay, heading down to P5. Wait. Okay, I hear something. Over.
What?
The jingle for the subway station we got off at. Oh, what a bop. Why don't they have those in the United States? Over.
Oh, come on, stop joking. It's gotten dimmer outside, even while I've been standing here. The daylight filtering in from around the plywood is almost gone now. I just want to go back to the hotel.
Okay, but I do hear something, though. Remember that dripping you mentioned before? It's back. Over.
Maybe you were just too busy being a comedian to listen for it.
Fair point, but no, definitely didn't hear it before. Do you? Over.
No. Now that you mention it, I can't anymore. Weird. Is there water down there?
No, looks dry as a bone. Checking the corners now for any leakage. Water infiltration would make this place wildly expensive to fix up. More than it already would be. I mean, it... Pillars are the same as before, though. Over.
How about the door?
I'm just getting over there. Japanese people love their tiny cars, so this garage isn't huge, but it feels like it's taken me longer to get around on each passing level. Oh, by the way, temp is at 8.1. I'm not crazy. Over.
Not for that reason.
Ah, shut up. If you don't watch out, I'll assign you back to waste treatment inspections. Over.
I still remember the joy in your voice when you told me they'd become the firm's bread and butter.
Other people won't do them. That smell? Money. Anyway, okay. I'm at the door. This is weird. Over.
What's weird?
Well, now I want to head back up to P4 to check it up there, too. And I will on the way back up. I didn't notice it last time, but there's a little sticker at the top corner of the door. You'd have to break it if you were to open it up. The whole thing is jammed shut just as tightly as the last one, but the sticker, I mean... got writing on it. Kanji characters. Over.
What do they say?
I can't really see. It's kind of glossy, and when I hit it with the light, there's this sheen that stops me from seeing much of anything. Over.
All sparkle and no substance, just like our marketing strategy.
Hush. We do deliver the goods in the end. Yeah, nope, I can't see. It's strange, though, because otherwise it feels kind of like it's getting darker. Like, dark is dark, right? It shouldn't make a difference either way. It should have been pitch black from the time I made it down to P3, but it's thick now. Almost soupy. Over.
I want to mock you, but I believe it. This place gives me the willies. Come on, get moving and then get back up here.
I'm trying. Okay, heading down the ramp to P6 now. Can you believe it's still getting colder? From the bottom of the ramp, the reading is 7.2. Over.
What's that in American?
It is a sign that you should learn to understand the metric system. Okay, just from sweeping the flashlight around, I'm not seeing anything unusual about this floor. The dripping is still there, louder than ever even, but there's not even a hint of water anywhere in this place. The pillars are the same layout, and yep, flash my light over at the door. I see the sticker in the dark. You know what? Over.
What?
Let's be a little sloppy. Maybe that door is stuck, maybe it isn't. I'm 90% sure we're not seeing the inside of that stairwell tonight, and in any case, nobody is coming this far down just to try and get into it. Just say that it was consistent with previous, and I'll head down to 7. Over.
Do you know how I feel about this?
Listen, yes, I do, but come on, let's get out of here and have some curry. Screw hot coffee, I want hot sake. I'll treat you, and we'll be done with all of this. They'll have to rip out the whole stairwell anyway. Over.
Fine, but if we go to court, I'm spilling the beans.
Yeah, okay, heading down to 7. Whoa, woof. Okay, almost tripped. I think the ramps are getting steeper. Over.
It doesn't make sense. They have to be built to a standard grade.
Nobody who designed this place have ever heard of a building code. I'm just going to get a temperature reading, scan to make sure everything is the same, and head down to 8, and then we'll be done. Okay. Ooh. 6.1. Over.
That's a bigger drop than before.
Well, I'm pretty far underground now. Assuming 10 feet per floor, I'm gonna be 60 feet below you now and 70 feet below the surface. Over.
But it doesn't keep getting colder forever, does it?
Nah, it shouldn't, but with this place, I don't know what to expect. All right, just inspecting visually, I'm not seeing any deviation between P7 and P6. Wait. I just realized something. Be sure you get this down. Over.
Yeah?
You got a sheet of paper handy, right? I'm gonna ask you a favor. Draw a 7x7 grid. Over.
Okay.
All right. It's gonna be just like a chessboard. Letters for columns, numbers for rows. Just one fewer row and column. According to the plans, the pillars were supposed to go like one smack in the middle next to the ramp, right at D4. And then 8 more around the room. 2D, 2B, 4B, 6B, 6D, 6F. It's sort of like a rectangle, except the ones that would block the ramp are missing, right? Or you could think of it as a square with a dot in the middle and one side missing. Got it? Over.
I'd love to know where you're going with this.
I'm getting there. Okay, draw another grid. Over.
Seriously?
This is what you're being paid for. On this grid, fill in the spaces E2, C2, A2, C4, B5, D6. Notice anything? Over.
Yeah, most of these parking spots are totally unusable.
Christ, use your imagination. Is there a shape? Over.
Oh, I guess I see, like, half a keyhole?
Yeah. The rest is cut off by the ramp, but that's what I'm seeing too, but why a keyhole? Okay, I'm heading down to P8 now. Over.
Finally.
You said it. Bottom of the ramp. Temp is at 4.1. I cannot stay down here much longer. My teeth are chattering. But this is the last floor. Same pillars, same weird dripping. Looking for the sticker, but... Oh, nope, there it is. My flashlight had trouble reaching it. Maybe the batteries are dying? Over.
Well, you can come up now at least.
Yeah, I can. Wait. Can you look at the plans? Over.
I've had them in front of me the whole time.
They only go to 8, right? Like, that's the last sub-level. Over.
Well, they're all in Japanese, so it's hard for me to tell, but yeah, the last page has a bunch of 8s all over it, and it doesn't seem to show a down ramp from there. Why?
Well, the plans are wrong. There's a level 9. Over.
Are you sure that's...
It is completely consistent with the kind of bullshit we've been dealing with since we got here. I'm just gonna head down and take a quick look around. Everything is the same as P7 and above, except the temperature. Over.
Are you sure you have to?
I really should. I cut enough corners as it is. Over.
Well, you're the last person I would expect to hear that from.
Heading down the ramp to Pin. Wow, this is steep. And I appreciate the vote of confidence, but I do take some pride in the work I do. This is our first Japan job, and if the managing agent finds out we decided to skip inspections on part of the garage, which sunk, think of all the money we'd lose. Plus, I'd have to fire Taro, and that man knows how to pick his sake. Over.
The right conclusion for the wrong reasons, eh? Classic Steve. What's the temp down there?
Checking. 3.2. At least it's getting colder more slowly. Over.
That's a pretty thin silver lining. Any differences down there?
Nope, but the dripping keeps getting louder, even though there's still no water. Over.
God, this cannot end fast enough.
You aren't even down here. You don't know the half of it. Okay. Heading down to P10 because of course there's a P10. Could you even drive a car down this ultra-steep ramp? I mean, obviously a cold violation, but I feel like a broken record at this point. I mean, temperature is 2.3. God, I've been freezing for what feels like forever. But soon, I'm going to be literally freezing. Over.
It's full out dark now. The sunset fast. Now there's no light at all up here except the flashlight.
Sunsets are faster the further south you go, and Japan isn't all that far from the tropics. But I guarantee it's even darker down here. This feels like the darkest place I've ever been. I can see wherever I shine the flashlight, but otherwise it's almost like a liquid. It feels like I'm swimming in it. Over.
Don't say things like that and then tell me you're going to keep going.
Just a couple more floors. Beyond that, I'm worried that the oxygen levels are going to drop too low to continue, so I'd hire a special team to do the rest of this for us, but that means a change in order, and that means pissing off the client. Last resort. Over.
At what point does safety trump business?
I don't think it's unsafe down here. There's no sound except the dripping. All right, heading down to P11. Whoa! Okay. I'm gonna have to do the next ramp backwards. If they get too much steeper than this, we'll need to bring climbing gear down here. Over.
Are you sure you can get back up?
It's fine. I'll be fine. Just gotta do the job. Okay, temperature reading 1.5. Everything else looks the same. Over.
I wonder if there's a giant freezer down there.
If that's the case, somebody is paying a massive electric bill. That thing is leaking air like a sieve. Wait. Shit. Over.
What now?
I just realized something. That keyhole shape. We saw that today. Over.
What, did you unlock a door?
No, on the flight in this morning. Remember, it was like 10 minutes after the final drink service and we were making the descent into Kansai International. Over.
I'm surprised you spared a glance for anything other than that flight attendant you were oogling the whole time.
Who? You noticed? Anyway, I happened to look out the window, and I saw it. A chain of big parks. It looked like, except... I don't think they were parks. Normally, with parks, there's at least some open space, you know? These were just big squares filled with trees, like old-growth forest or something. But in the middle of each square, there was a lake. And in the middle of the lake, there was an island. Over.
This sounds like you're describing a dream.
It does, doesn't it? But they're real. I Googled them later, and they had a Wikipedia page and everything. You know what the islands were shaped like? Over.
Keyholes.
Bingo! Keyholes. According to Wikipedia, those places weren't actually parks at all. In fact, they weren't even built this millennium. Over.
What were they? Forts?
I think they definitely were meant to protect what they had inside, but no, not forts. They're called kofun, and they're ancient tombs. Over.
Shit.
I mean, it's probably a coincidence. This place is no kofun, and there weren't parking cars in 500 AD. Okay. Heading down to P12. Over.
Are you sure you should?
I've got this feeling like I'm near the bottom. Wow. Okay. Climbing down this ramp is interesting. Okay, here's the temperature reading. It is 0.6. Good Lord, I'm freezing. Visually, everything else is the same. Over.
Great. Now get out of there.
There's another level. I'm gonna climb down. Over.
Don't!
What? Over.
Come on back up. We can come back with more people. It's not worth it.
If this isn't the last one, I promise I will. Over.
Okay.
Shit.
Was that splashing?
Yeah, fuck. My feet are soaked. There's water down here. It's ankle deep and cold as fucking ice. God, the temperature is 0.1, flickering at, fuck, 0.0. There might be another level, but I don't have a dry suit, so I'm just gonna check it out down here and call it a night. Over.
Finally.
Yeah, I feel the same. Yeah, the dripping is loud as ever. I'm gonna head over to the door to make sure that same sticker is there and... That's weird. Over.
What now?
There's like a platform in the middle of the water. It's maybe 6 inches high and it covers the whole area enclosed by the columns. It's shaped like a...
A keyhole?
I hate to say it, but yeah. You know what? I'm just going to pretend like that's normal and head over to the stairwell door. I'm going to lose my shit if I spend even 5 extra seconds thinking about any of this. Over.
Just get out of there already.
I am almost done. I'm just checking out the stairwell door. My flashlight couldn't even reach it from the ramp. I don't know why it's so weak all of a sudden. Shit. Over.
Is that wind I hear?
Yeah. There's a cold-ass breeze coming from the stairwell. I don't know why or how. And the dripping is getting louder. Oh, fuck.
Get out of there!
The sticker on the door, Joanna. The seal.
What about it?
My light is so fucking dim now that it's not too shiny to read anymore. And, I know those characters. I can read them.
What do they say?
It means smash devil tag. Ha-ma-huda. Ha-ma-huda. It means smash devil tag. It's a lucky charm. A seal. A ward.
A ward? Like...
Fuck!
Steve!
Shit, oh fucking Christ, oh no, 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 oh god, fuck.
Is that ice cracking? And I can even hear the dripping now, even through the walkie-talkie. Is something...
Joanna, listen to me. The seal, it's fucking broken.
It's what?
Get out of here, leave it!
Steve? Steve, what's all that splashing? Can you hear me, Steve?
I hope you enjoyed The Code and the Key, as written by Alyssa Williford and performed by Jonathan West and Olivia Steele. This tale comes to us by a trusted old friend, the No Sleep subreddit. Find Alyssa Williford's work there, along with many others, on the No Sleep subreddit. Our second tale of the evening is written by Quincy Lee and performed by Eric Peabody, featuring Olivia Steele and Nick Goroff. Now, without further ado, I present to you... As a kid, my best friend said it's easy to get away with murder. Now, I'm worried he wasn't just boasting.
My friend, Sam, has always been troubled. The sort of kid you knew would go down the wrong path and wind up in the news. I remember when the story about Daniel Petrick came out. He was that teen who, back in 2007, took his father's gun from a safe after his parents took away Halo 3. He came up behind them while they were on the sofa watching TV, told them he had a surprise for them, and shot them both in the back of the head. Not long after the Petrick story came out, I remember Sam laughing and telling me,
"Dummy got caught almost immediately. If I were ever gonna do something like that, I'd be smarter about it."
We lived only 3 houses apart, so we used to hang out a lot. Sam was obsessed with true crime, which meant we watched a ton of it. He was drawn to the most heinous stuff, like Catherine Knight, the woman who in 2000 butchered her husband and cooked him up into a meal and hung his skin up to dry. The officers who came to her house brushed against the skin, thinking it was a curtain. This was way inappropriate for 12-year-olds, of course, but neither of us had very involved parents. Maybe because of all this stuff, Sam was convinced that evil was pretty much everywhere.
"Dude,"
he said,
"if this is how much we see the people who are caught, how many do you think get away with it?"
"Not many," I said confidently. "If they did, we'd hear about it in the news. People would be disappearing."
"But think, how many might be labeled accidents, but are really murders? Falls down the stairs, heart attacks. I bet so many people bump off old folks when they don't want to take care of them, or want their money."
"Doubt it," I said again.
"It would be so easy. I bet there's tons of murders sliding under the radar because people just don't expect you to actually kill. So easy.
In hindsight, this conversation screams red flag. But as kids, we both had a morbid fascination with the stuff. But by far, Sam's biggest obsession was the piano wire killer, who strangled 4 women in our city and was never caught. I found out from Sam's dad, not from Sam himself, that one of the victims was actually Sam's older half-sister. She was abducted in 99 when Sam was only 4 years old. Like all the victims, she was found naked, her body recovered from the tunnels under Nicolette Island. And finally, I understood the motive for his true crime obsession. He wanted to catch the person who'd killed his sister. He was trying to understand how it happened. When I asked him about her, he claimed to remember her singing to him and playing on the swings, and admitted he watched every scrap of news relating to her death that he could. So, that summer, I suggested we search, go into the tunnels and look for clues.
Bro.
Sam's eyes lit up.
That would be dope.
We spent a whole summer scoping out those tunnels, winding through unlit utility passages seemingly forever through the cool dark. If you know your way, you can crawl through a narrow passage to Satan's Cave, where teens and urban explorers sneak in to drink, light up, and graffiti their names. There are even some carvings on the cave walls people have made of goat heads and demon faces, but it's mostly just discarded beer bottles and trash. The explorations were thrilling, but the closest we found to anything suspicious was a switchblade, a discarded baby doll, and a loop of wire that seemed likely to have come from a bracelet. Sam insisted the news was all wrong, that the killer wasn't anything like people suspected. Maybe he was right, but he was wrong about the tunnels. There was no evidence there of any killer whatsoever, piano wire or otherwise. After that summer, our interests shifted from true crime to video games. We played a lot of shooters. I got into sports, taekwondo, and later rowing, backpacking, any wilderness stuff. Sam got into drugs. We'd still occasionally meet up for a hike. I'd go for the nature. He would go for the opportunity to light up and escape his parents' constant squabbles. But I saw less and less of him. By the time I entered college, he was in and out of jail, getting in trouble for dealing, for breaking and entering, petty crime stuff. The last time I heard from him was when he called me from jail, asking me to bail him out, reminding me what good friends we used to be, reminiscing.
Hey, Rufus,
he said.
Remember that summer we spent searching the tunnels?
Yeah. Pretty transparent, trying to tug at my heartstrings with a bond that had wilted years ago. But I smiled anyway because those were better times.
That was dope,
he said.
We never did find much, did we?
Nope.
Bet if we searched those tunnels now, things would be different. Hey, maybe we go once again, I'm out. Yeah?
Sure.
So, I was wondering if you could do me a favor.
Yeah, okay. I was a sucker. I went and bailed him out later that day. We made plans to hang out, to maybe explore those tunnels again. I knew he'd blow me off, but what can I say? He was an old friend, and I felt bad that he'd wound up this way, while my life was pretty steady. What's more, he'd found out while in custody that his dad had died. Suicide, apparently. Which was not a surprise to anyone who knew Sam's father, but nonetheless, surely must have hit Sam hard. Sam was worried now about his mom having to raise his baby sister alone. Plus, they needed money. They always needed money. He wanted to go check up on the two of them, make sure they were doing okay without his dad. I told him I was here if he or his family needed any help. I gave him my condolences. He just smiled and told me thanks and didn't mention his father again on the drive back.
You know, they actually found new evidence in the case?
He said to me when I dropped him off. Shit, really?
Yeah.
The ghost of a smile.
I'll tell you about it next week.
But he didn't get a chance. I got a voice call from him 2 days before we were supposed to meet up. The call dropped before I could answer. When I tried calling him back, it rang a few times and stopped. My subsequent calls went straight to voicemail. Sam ghosting me was nothing new, but when our appointed meetup passed and he still wasn't replying to me, I messaged his mom. She said he'd left ranting about the piano wire killer and the tunnels, but she thought it was just his usual talk. He was always spouting big ideas and conspiracy theories, never amounting to anything. She started to complain about how she'd thrown her back out, and with him running off again, there was no one to help but Maisie, his little sister. The trash and laundry were too heavy for her to lift by herself. I told her I'd come by later, but now I was truly worried for Sam. Called, messaged, even reported my concerns to the police, but they jumped right to assuming he'd skipped town to avoid a court hearing, which was, I admit, a pretty plausible assumption. No trace of him anywhere. Still no signal from his phone. He'd gotten out of jail, mentioned new evidence, arranged to meet me, and vanished. I decided to check the tunnels. The entrance we'd used as kids was smaller and more overgrown than I remembered. I climbed down the embankment through brush and dry leaves, out onto the concrete ledge, and then ducked into the cool darkness of the tunnel with its low ceiling and narrow walls. Flicked on my flashlight. The faint odor of sewage wafted to my nostrils as I made my way forward, the only sound the echo of my boots treading on the concrete. After a while of running my hand along the cool brick, I paused and turned to glance behind me. The entrance had become a distant square of white light. Was this really a good idea? Well, obviously not. I might go stumbling into whatever had caused Sam to disappear. Besides which, I couldn't remember the directions to Satan's cave. And even if I did find my way in, what was I supposed to be looking for?
You know, they actually found new evidence in the case.
Sam's hint in our last conversation had me tugging out my phone, searching the news, and I was stunned at the headline that came up. 25 years after brutal killings, piano wire killer confesses. Whoa. Sam had seriously downplayed this. It wasn't just new evidence. The killer was actually in custody and had confessed. So where the fuck was Sam then? Maybe the police were right about him skipping town, leaving his mother alone to look after his sister, me scrambling to find him, and no one to pick up the pieces from his shattered life. I sighed and headed over to help his mom take out the trash. Sam's car was in the back when I pulled up, and my spirits lifted. I was eager to chew him out for all the usual trouble, but when I got inside, his mom told me he wasn't back yet. His car battery had died, and he'd left by bike a few days ago. The house was a mess, filled with empty pizza boxes, several full garbage bags, laundry piled up. Sam's mom, Eleanor, had thrown her back out, I remembered, and couldn't lift heavy things. So, without Sam, she had no one to take out the trash or carry loads of laundry besides Maisie, and Maisie wasn't a very consistent helper, being only 11 years old.
Is that Rufus?
Maisie came bounding down as I was collecting the trash bags. Her nose wrinkled.
It smells like ass in here.
You should help your mom more, I said. Once I'd cleared the trash out, I was getting ready to leave when, on a sudden impulse, I went upstairs to the room Sam had been using, thinking he might have left me some hint as to where he'd gone. But I found the room taped off with a giant "Keep Out" sign. Maisie, bouncing up the stairs after me, told me no one was allowed in.
Especially me,
she added, making a face. Well, I'm his best friend, so I'm allowed, I said. but the door was locked. Undeterred, I started opening drawers downstairs in the main room. When we were little, Sam would sometimes lock his door, and his parents would open it and tell him not to shut them out. I vaguely remembered there being a key kept in a junk drawer. While searching, I called out to Sam's mom, asking if she'd heard anything from him. She shouted back from the basement,
"He'll turn up eventually, like a bad penny."
I grunted and opened a desk drawer. No keys, just old electronics and cell phones, and closed it. Then opened it again and blinked. Sam's cell phone. I recognized it from the day I bailed him out. As soon as I had it in my hand, its heavy solidity made my pulse ratchet up. I brought it out to my car and plugged it in, started up the phone. Couldn't get past the password. After a few more tries, I went back inside. Sam's mom was still doing laundry. I told Maisie to go sit in my car, that I'd take her to get ice cream in a few minutes, and then I went upstairs. My heart was pounding harder now. The unpleasant odor still lingered, despite the garbage having been cleared out. Sweat pooled under my armpits as I peeled the tape off the door and put my shoulder against it. It didn't require much force. A couple of short bursts, and I flung it open. Sam's bed was unmade, laundry on the floor, dirty dishes. Messy, like his life. No sign of him. My eyes turned to the closet, to the faint stain of reddish brown on the carpet. I slid the door open, wobbly in its tracks. My eyes watered. The stench hit me like sewage and old meat. I closed the door and dialed the police.
I bet there's tons of murders sliding under the radar because people just don't expect you to actually kill. So easy.
After unlocking Sam's phone, the police discovered he'd been drafting me an email. It included a link to a more detailed article about the piano wire killer's confession. A confession to 3 of the 4 murders, but not to the murder of Sam's sister. Police suspected, even back in 1999, that it was a copycat killing. Suspected because the type of wire used to strangle her didn't match with the other victims. Over the years, I'd forgotten this detail. Sam never did. His mom was still downstairs when the police arrived, and I showed them his body, tucked into the closet and curled as if asleep, but rotting, leaking. Only later would the pieces fall into place, that even as a child he'd suspected his mother of murdering the half-sister who was born from another woman, that the entire summer we explored the tunnels, that's what he was really looking for, evidence to connect his mother to her death. We found nothing back then, but these past weeks, the piano wire killer's confession brought it all back, a confession Sam's father likely read. But by the time Sam got out of custody, his father was dead. Sam was looking for proof, not only of his sister's murder, but also his father's. He died of blunt force trauma to the head. Unlike his sister's or father's deaths, which were planned carefully enough that even now it was hard to prove them, police seemed to think his was improvised. Perhaps he confronted his mother. Or perhaps she caught him snooping. She likely threw her back out trying to move his body. Sticking him in the closet and sealing the room was a stopgap measure. But even so, she might have gotten away with it, and I might have assumed he was still out in the world somewhere, running into trouble like always, if I hadn't seen his phone.
It would be so easy.
I never knew when he said this that he was voicing suspicions about his own mother. No wonder his worldview was so bleak, his sense of people one of constant mistrust. He didn't confide in anyone, not even me. But I'm glad the truth is finally out. I just wonder how many deaths, how many assumed accidents, how many heinous misdeeds go flying under the radar, like he says. I'm worried that my best friend has always been right, and it's so much more than we realize.
I hope you enjoyed. As a kid, my best friend said it's easy to get away with murder. Now, I'm worried he wasn't just boasting. As written by Quincy Lee and performed by Eric Peabody, featuring Olivia Steele and Nick Goroff. Quincy Lee lives in the Twin Cities with their spouse and four cats. Sign language interpreter by day, horror writer by night. They post most of their spine-tingling tales on No Sleep under the username u/letssplitup. When not writing, they can be found practicing kung fu, folding origami paper bonsai, or tending to their garden. Well, on to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Gyre has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out The Fear from the Heartland Archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, that's X, and Instagram, if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Steve Taylor, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.